Warning! The following Otaku Generation podcast has content of an adult and mature nature, and is not necessarily safe for work or appropriate for children under the age of 18. If you are easily offended by content of this type, please stop this recording. Parental discretion is advised. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on Otaku Generation are those of the cast and crew and the individuals that express them, and are not necessarily associated with the sponsors or guests of the show. Otaku Generation is a Red Apple production, which is solely responsible for its content. All impressions are poorly impersonated, and please, for the love of God, don't try this at home.
Hey man, this is Dwayne, and you're listening to a popka, what the fuck is this show called anyway? The Otaku Generation podcast, online at otakugeneration.net. Hey, you want to touch my burrito?
Welcome to Otaku Generation. Next generation radio for otaku. Our podcast brings all the otaku to the yard.
You better not shout, and you better not cry. You better not pout, I'm telling you why. Because I said so. Podcasting from otakugeneration.net, and in a basement where it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, or like Alan's on a nasty Coke binge. Show number 26, December 7th, 2005. I'm your announcer and host, Paul Shushuk, along with Alan Chase and the rest of the OG crew. With tonight's guest, Aaron Clark, webmaster of the AvaMonkey.com, Ava panelist and congoer, and quite possibly the only guy here who knows what the hell's going on. And now, the Otaku G, who thinks that Yuletide Carol is a nautical term, Alan Chase.
Dude, I totally thought that was pixie, you know, pixie stick dust. I swear.
Sure.
I swear.
It is.
That's my story. Right. I'm sticking to it.
It's baking soda.
Yeah, we can't hear you, Sean, because Aaron was like unrumbling salad stuff. See, he's still doing it.
Aaron. Alan.
Thanks,
for
Aaron.
Christmas, I'm getting you a pack of powdered sugar.
Tana, just like to say you are a bad man. Sorry, PSP porn has taken me away, Robin.
Oh, boy. Oh, I don't even know.
It's a video podcast. It's legal.
Yeah.
But we have Pringles.
It's the Suicide Girls. Like, it doesn't get any better than porn and goth at the same time.
I don't know. Okay, stop looking at the porn.
God.
Seriously, we have a podcast to do. You can always look at porn later. Now.
Don't show porn to your fiancé. What kind of jackass are you?
There's always time for porn.
Okay, that's a total lie. I like porn as much as the next guy.
So anyhow, the reason
the next guy being Aaron.
The reason.
Yeah, you don't like porn.
I'm going to cut
me,
everybody
okay.
off because I wanted to say the reason I played Dwayne's podcast show ID is because Mondays has finally come back on the, I guess, the air of the podcasting world. So it's awesome. They were like off for forever.
I think a term that will work for that is Mondays is now back online.
That works too.
When did they not release it on Monday? Oh no, wait, today is Monday.
I don't know when they release it. I just noticed that it's finally back.
But yeah, I'm happy. I didn't see it, but
all right. I'm happy. That's all that's important. Well, anyhow, we have lots of feedback as usual, but I just wanted to get these two in real quick. So we asked people about, get us some information or Wikipedia stuff and whatnot. And so a couple people went on and did a Google search on Duck Hole, and I'll just give this link out. Won't talk too much about it, but thank you, Richard. The Shrinkster is 9LR. And then another one, we were, again, more about Duck Hole. Shrinkster, I guess it's 9LS. And that is pretty much it for that from me. But you guys got feedback, so you guys want to read some stuff?
Yeah, definitely. On the same vein, Sean, one of our listeners, and I'm gathering from his email address that he's in. No, not you, Sean. This is a listener, Sean, that he's in Illinois, probably Evanston, Illinois. He went the extra mile for us, and he actually, last week, we made a challenge to any listener out there who would create a Wikipedia entry for us. And guess what? He went ahead and did it. To wit, he writes, "Well, you asked for it, so I threw together a Wikipedia page for the show, and it is at shrinkster.com/9MA for mature audiences." It doesn't have
something
all that
we
much.
Haven't got here.
That's right. Yeah, immature. Duh.
No, that's immature cast members, immature audiences.
Yeah. Hey, speak for yourself, Todd.
All right.
It doesn't have all that much yet, and I will keep working on it, but the best part is that it is Wikipedia, so any of your listeners, that means you guys out there listening. Yeah, you too, Kitty. We haven't heard from Kitty in a while, by the way.
Kitty, write in.
Kyle's lonely.
I am. Let's see. Any of your listeners or even you guys can add to it or correct it if I put up anything wrong. I even added a link to the page on the notorious duck hole, but haven't been able to track down the exact point at which the joke started yet. If anyone else has, they can click the link and fill in the information. Also, he says, Piano Squall was a great guest when I first heard about him. That was last week, right?
Yeah.
Piano Squall was a great guest. I was really skeptical, but you guys have turned me into a believer. I got into game and anime music in a similar way that he did. The Final Fantasy IV and VI soundtracks do rock, and it's cool to find out that he has such a neat fan community. Oh, and I forgot who brought up Amazon Women on the Moon. Who was that?
Dan the Fan.
That was Dan the Fan. Okay. But while it is a really funny movie, it's not quite as good as its predecessor in spirit, the Kentucky Fried Movie, which is pretty funny. All of the shorts are hit and miss, though when they hit, they really hit. But any of the classic Kung Fu movie fan would like the segment A Fistful of Yen, which contains the famous line, quote, I am building a fighting force of extraordinary magnitude.
I was Donald Rumsfeld, actually. I was always a big fan of Catholic High School Girls in Trouble.
Do you mean a movie or actually Catholic High School Girls in Trouble?
Both. But it was a skit in the Kentucky Fried Movie.
Finally, Sean writes, I know some of you are huge Beck fans, and that means both Beck, the Scientologist, and Beck, the anime. Go ahead.
There's a difference?
Well, we have yet to explore that. And I came across the music video to Beat Crusaders' hit in the USA, which is the theme song from Beck, which was pretty amusing and thought you might want to share it with your listeners. And you guys can find that at shrinkster.com/9MB, as in Montgomery.
Megabyte.
Thank you. Yeah. I was thinking Montgomery Burns because I'm such a Simpsons nerd. Go ahead.
I think we referenced that a couple shows ago, too, because we were talking about something and it was like bad, you know, English or something like
right,
that.
Right. And he found a awesome video for it. And he also came across a couple of Asian Kung Fu Generation videos, which aren't bad. You can check those out at shrinkster.com/Alan. Help me read your handwriting. Is that 9MC?
It would be the next one. So 9MC?
Ah, BC. I see. That's how the alphabet goes.
Hey.
9MC and 9MD. But anyway, Sean, thank you very much for writing in. We will check all of those out. Who's next?
Yeah, anyone else got some?
Actually, I've got something here real quick. We get some feedback from Dean. Hey, gang, I've been listening to the show for several months now. I have a job on the night shift with a lot of dead time overnight and a laptop with several podcasts on it to help fill the void. Since you talk about Japanese music now and then, I wanted to quickly mention a band that I stumbled across a while ago named the Yoshida Brothers. The brothers play the shamisen, the Japanese stringed instrument played by smacking the strings at the headboard with a block of wood. Actually, they used turtle shell, traditionally.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's
really?
Correct.
Huh. But
are
while
the turtles in them, or do they...
No, after the turtle is long since dead.
Oh, phew.
Well, then it really sucks to be the turtle.
Well, no, they actually waited until they died and then did it.
Oh, so
yeah, we're not actually
bored?
Talking about the animals. We're talking about that old 70s band, the Turtles.
The Turtles, right.
So they've got the instrument, and they're just sitting there waiting for the turtle to die?
Right.
What if it's one of those turtles that lasts, like, you know, 300 years?
Well,
so you never get to play your instrument?
They were also made out of some woods, too, sometimes.
They have notes from doctors saying they died of natural causes.
Anyway.
PETA, if you're listening, don't write in.
Continuing with the email. But while they do some traditional Japanese folk music, they mostly play funk, jazz, fusion, and rock. Their instrumentals lend a unique ethnic flavor to a more modern jazz band style. That, and I just love the sound of the shamisen. I've grabbed both of their albums off of iTunes and have yet to put either one down. They come well recommended. Thanks for the listening material. Good luck with the holidays, Dean.
It was Yoshida Brothers? Is that what that was?
Yeah, that was Yoshida Brothers. We'll have to look that up.
To chime in on that briefly, there's another band that a former guest of ours, Matt Palmer, you may remember him, the guy who went to Japan, started Temple's Anime Club. That was what, like Show 7? No. A little after that.
No, it was like Memorial Day. It was
like 10 or 11.
I guess it was Labor Day.
I'll have to look it up.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I'll Google our own show like Todd does.
Heck yeah, site:// otakugeneration.libsyn.com.
But yeah, Matt is a huge shamisen fan. He actually plays, which is why we know as much about it as we do. And he got me into a band, and I'm only remembering the last part of his name, which is Agetsuma. But,
something like that, yeah.
He plays shamisen as well in pretty much the best way I can describe it, a fusion band. You listen to like the first song on his album and it sounds like a techno dance remix with shamisen.
There's another band called Rin Japan. R-I-N Japan, I believe. I'll look that up. I'll put a link somewhere.
Okay.
I have some pictures of them. They were at the Cherry Blossom Festival, I think, last year.
Oh, down in D.C.?
Yeah. Or maybe it was 2 years ago. I don't know. I have pictures. I have plenty of pictures of them. They're pretty cool, too. Sorry,
so
go ahead.
So there you go. You got a couple of recommendations there. Agetsuma does a lot of rock fusion. In fact, he doesn't do any other shamisen playing. Like, he is a traditional player, but everything he does on an album
is rock and roll style, and it's just really cool.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so did someone else have feedback?
I actually have a feedback now that I just completely derailed that. Sorry about that, Aaron.
No big deal.
Anyway, this email is titled Meizani Koku, and it's from Adam. I guess that's what you want to be called, A-T-O-M. And it goes, "Hey guys, I grew up watching Robotech and Kimba the White Lion. Really appreciated the Yamada review."
Yeah, wasn't that Simba the White Lion?
I know, it's a joke. It's a joke.
"I assume that predated Robotech. Saw Warriors on the Wind when I was young and resaw it as Nausicaa recently. I dreamed about that movie for years. Although I've dabbled in watching anime, recently I got back into anime after a friend recommended Meizani Koku. It's a fantastic anime with a great story. I realize most of you guys are more into guns and guts in anime, but I'm looking for a series that's more realistic. No Inuyasha people with tails and talking tigers."
Wait, that's not realistic?
Anyway.
Okay, go watch Marmalade Boy.
Hey, I liked Marmalade Boy. Shut the hell up.
You would.
Anyway, great podcast. Been listening since episode one. You were my first podcast, Adam.
Glad we could pop your cherry, Adam. Thank Is you, that Adam in his package?
No, no, without the joke. Package, apparently.
No, but never mind. But I wanted to interject a couple other shrink shirts links that are just kind of funny. One I saw today, someone had posted up in LiveJournal. I can't remember who, but this is Shrinkster 9N as in Nancy 6, and I'm just going to call it the Xmas Cat. You guys just have to watch it. Actually, I'll bring that up. We'll do it after. We'll do it soon. But the other one is, I saw a news article, and I thought this was funny as hell. A cat was stuck in a fridge for 4 days. Did you hear about this? Shrinkster 9N7.
No.
And it was like 10 pounds going in, and it was like 3 pounds coming out.
How is that odd? How is that funny?
It's not funny, but it's just like, it was...
It's
just
amazing.
Like,
yeah,
it's. I mean, I feel bad for the cat when he got stuck in a fridge.
You've obviously never had pets.
I have. I still have.
Did you guys hear?
See,
about the
that's
cat
why I have a laser pointer.
Follow it,
Todd. Follow it, Todd.
A cat went to France.
Yeah, a cat actually got stuck in a shipping container.
Oops.
And made the like 2 week journey to France, and then was stuck in quarantine for another 30 days in France before they could send it back.
And people wonder where the terms like "curiosity killed the cat" come from. I mean,
well, it's not the first time I've heard about this. I've heard of cats stuck in vending machines that their owners were repairing.
Nice.
I've heard of all sorts of terrible places where cats wound up and then were eventually found again.
25, 35, okay.
40, I don't have
3.
Meow,
come on.
Meow.
I got stuck.
Kids, if you're listening and you find an old refrigerator in a junkyard, they're fun to play inside. Just, you know, like, go inside.
Ignore him.
Oh, my God.
For the love of God.
Kyle.
Don't try this at home.
Listen to Kyle. Do what he says. The leprechaun is talking to you.
Okay, leprechaun.
So before we move on, let's introduce our guest.
Yay.
Aaron Clark. Man, this guy is awesome, man. He knows more about Eva than us as a collective group.
I think he knows more than Hideaki Anno does. I don't know.
Possibly. Anyhow. Anime fan, obsessor, otaku, I guess, since 16, and now to be here talking to us, where we totally abuse him and hopefully get all the answers to our questions about Eva. Aaron Clark.
Hi, everybody.
Aaron, you just got the OG clap. Feels special.
I feel so privileged.
Awesome. All right, so to avoid confusion, we're going to call Aaron in the studio Leprechaun Boy today. So, Leprechaun Boy.
This is Otaku News.
What do you have for this week?
This week, I accidentally got into Alan's Bolivian marching powder. First up this week, I have some news on Duke Nukem Forever.
Oh, yeah.
It seems that Amazon.co.uk has a release date on everyone's favorite vaporware. They initially had it listed as December 2nd, the date that the Xbox 360 launched in the UK. And now they have it listed as April 26th, 2006, which should be right around the release of the PlayStation 3, I believe. I was a huge Duke Nukem fan back in the day. I played every Duke Nukem game from the original side-scrolling platformer to the FPS version and even the later crappier renditions of the series. So I always watch these rumors with a certain amount of amusement. This product is kind of like the gaming equivalent of Bigfoot. And the funny thing about Amazon listing the release date is that the manufacturer, 3D Realms, explicitly says on their website not to pre-order this bad boy. You know, and ultimately this is really sad because this game could potentially give the FPS genre the massive shot in the arm that it needs. But alas, we will have to chew bubblegum and kick ass another time.
Or it could be another Daikatana.
Well, yeah, but it's Duke Nukem. At the very least, it'll be funny. But
wasn't that supposed to be a late-cycle PlayStation 1 game?
Yes, it's supposed to be a late-cycle everything game.
It's been postponed so many times, and they keep trashing it to totally rewrite it from the ground up.
I think they got to a point where they thought it would be a great running joke where they say, hey, we'll just keep leading these people every 6 months.
I wouldn't put it past them.
I had heard it was going to be released on the Phantom console when that ships.
Yeah, because I'm sure that'll happen.
Phantom console. That was a wonderful romp through imagination.
So anyway, if you want to read more about the release date for Duke Nukem Forever, check that out at shrinkster.com/9MP.
Ooh, buy me a copy while you're there.
I will. Next up, I have some almost comical news about a company that is quickly making itself a rather irritating laughing stock. Sony has decided to go gorilla with their marketing of the PSP.
How did I know this was going?
Yeah. Sony hired a series of graffiti artists to tag old buildings in major metropolitan areas with images of bugged out kids using the PSP in odd ways. Like one of them was using it like a skateboard, another one was riding it like a hobby horse.
Didn't they do this on The Apprentice Gran Turismo or whatever 4? Yeah, they did on The Apprentice. Those who watch The Apprentice will know what I'm talking about.
This stuff has happened
and
a
those
bunch.
Who don't are shit out of luck.
Now,
what's The Apprentice?
Well, yeah, right? You're fired. Now, the one upside to this, though, is that Sony actually got permission from the building owners to do this and paid them for taking up the space. However, it seems, though, that in San Francisco, there's been a huge backlash to this marketing campaign. People have actually been going and spraying over it and deriding Sony for trying to cash in on their countercultural countercultural phenomena of graffiti. Some of the funnier ones were like there was one that said "phony" with an F, kind of looked like the Sony logo.
So I do have to ask: the Sony executives do know that life is not Jet Set Radio Future.
I wouldn't put that past them. However, the marketing firms and the people who actually watch marketing trends were quick to jump to Sony's defense, saying that this is a unique idea that definitely reaches out to the hip, connected, savvy audience that likely already knows about this product in an attempt to gain some mind share.
And pisses directly on their shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why everybody's so pissed off about it, or at least the people in San Francisco. Personally, I'm always very leery of big companies that try to seem hip. No more porn, Sean. I like this idea in principle, but I have a hard time taking Sony seriously. I know that Sony BMG, purveyors of only the finest computer crippling DRM, are a separate unit that operates independently, but I just can't shake the feeling that Sony is trying way too hard to create an image that has no real substance. And now, I don't know about any of you, but I used to be such a massive comics geek. I could not get enough of comics.
Used to be. What happened?
As I grew up, my taste changed, and I just kind of grew away from it and into anime. Imagine that. However, though, when I saw this next story, the comic geek in me went squee in joy. It seems that according to the United States Post Office, in 2006, there will be a series of stamps based on the classic characters of the DC universe.
Ooh.
Superman, Wonder Woman, Plastic Man, Batman, Green Arrow, Aquaman, Hawkman, and Supergirl.
And Plasma Mailman.
Thank you.
I may have to start sending letters now.
They're all going to be featured on stamps. Each hero will have two stamps with a different pose on each stamp.
This is the post office trying to regain the geek community from email.
What does that mean? We get to vote on like the fat Superman versus the...
Dude, that'd be so hot.
Are you guys old enough to remember the Elvis stamp?
Yes.
More people voted than voted in the 1992 presidential election.
Nice.
So the next thing we're going to see is the Pokemon stamps. You got to get them all.
Oh, no.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That's a great idea.
If somebody from the post office is listening to this, they're going to be like, oh, that's a good idea. We're going to do that.
You've just saved the postal service.
You know, and as you know, as everyone was saying here, I understand that for most of us, stamps don't seem much more than just an antiquated notion. But when you get right down to it, this is actually a validation of the drawn medium in society. When comics can become accepted in this way, then it's not much of a leap for anime and manga to become more acceptable to the stiffs. Get it? Anyway, the official release with all the trimmings is said to be occurring in conjunction with a major comic convention. The rumor mill is pegging San Diego Comic-Con as the event that it's tied to.
Yeah, makes sense.
Anyway, watch out for this, as these are sure to become collector's items at the very least.
Someday there will be an Otaku Generation stamp.
They're sure as hell will. We're going to put my penis on it.
Actually, I heard there's a whole artisan thing about people making their own stamps, and, you know, not actually for legal tender, right.
For collection purposes.
Yeah. And there's some places, where actually print your own stamps.
I have some awesome ones. They actually say S&H on them.
Don't you mean S&M?
Not for Todd.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, moving right along. Last up this week, I'm fresh out of J-pop hotness, so I thought I'd focus on something a little closer to home. I found a couple of hot mashups at Boing Boing. First up.
Ooh, say that again.
Boing Boing.
I found a couple of hot mashups at Boing Boing.
Find a nickel for every time I heard that.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God. Boing Boing. Number one reason I'm late to work.
Squirtle. First up on my mashup hit list is Q Unit. This is a mashup of Queen's Greatest Hits and 50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Trying.
Don't do that.
Now, not only is this hilarious, and with titles like This Is How We Bite the Dust, Bohemian Wangsta, and We Will Rock You in the Club, how could this not cause gales of laughter? But it's also skillfully done and is a great statement for the cause of the remix culture. You really have to hear this to get the full effect, but I can't recommend it highly enough. Next up is a mashup that I found that's 18 tracks of holiday, mixedness, I suppose. Santastic is 18 tracks of Christmas favorites sliced, diced, remixed, and mashed up for your listening pleasure. Some of this is so-so, and some of this is absolutely freaking brilliant. You can't go wrong with tracks like The Nutbreaker, this is a great track. It skillfully mixes the Nutcracker with marching band drum lines and electronic effects. It's one of the hottest things I've ever heard in my life.
Okay. Does sound cool, Tastic.
Okay.
Yeah, it does sound pretty hot.
Or my other favorite from this, Biggie's Last Christmas, which mixes George Michaels with P. Diddy.
Nice.
It's brilliant. The way that they put it together is absolutely brilliant.
Joel, excuse me. I think I'm broken now.
I honestly cannot stop listening to this stuff. I mean, I was at work. I just kept playing all these different tracks and just geeking out. It was the greatest thing ever.
There's another mashup with Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston. Something about a white pile.
Anyway, this whole mashup thing, it's infectious. And actually, I think I'm starting to leak all over Todd. Okay, that's all I got this week. And remember, kids, don't stick your head into the pile of white stuff.
Speaking of Christmas music, has anybody else noticed that all the new Christmas songs are really depressing? Like, I was standing in my bank this week, and I heard a song that was supposed to be on the Christmas station.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
No, that's just new, funny though, as hell.
It's depressing.
Like, I mean, the ones that have come out in the last 5 years that are supposedly hip and new, and there's, like, the Christmas Shoes song that came out 4 years ago, that's depressing.
Yeah.
The one that has the chorus about Mommy Meets Jesus Tonight, that's pretty awful.
You got to remind me, Alan.
Did you ever
After the podcast, I've got an album called The Levies, and they do Hanukkah songs. It's a whole album full of Hanukkah songs. Really? I bought it because I wanted to show it to you.
Oh, well, guys. I mean,
did you ever hear the Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues?
No. Very, not that I know of.
Very incredibly depressing Christmas song.
Robin, the original lyrics from the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is from the early 40s, I think, are really, really depressing. And they go like, Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It might be your last. And it goes on like that. And then eventually it was re-recorded. Yeah. They beat up the tone of it.
Well,
to go back
even further, I don't know when this came out, but this is one of those like classic Christmas carols that sort of fell by the wayside. There's the Coventry Carol, which is the single most depressing song on the planet, where it's talking all about Herod taking the children and slaughtering them.
Wow.
And it's a carol.
I am not saying that all Christmas carols before the last 10 years weren't depressing. I'm just saying that the ones that they've come out with recently are just sad. Really sad.
Well, the last 10 years have been pretty sad. So.
Kyle, what you're looking for is they gave it a upbeat suppository.
Thank you. Yeah. Exactly. Right. For Judy Garland.
Yeah.
All right. So
I'd like to give her an upbeat suppository.
On that note, let's get to our guest.
Hey, Aaron, hi.
Aaron, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm good.
Aaron is dialing in
I'm amazed
I'm amazed by the conversation taking place.
Speechless.
We're not
stunned him into silence.
We're not amazed at all.
I've got half a box of these upbeat pills left. You want
later?
Where are you going to stick them, Sean?
For those who are unwise to what's going on, is I hooked up my video camera and I can do some digital recording on it. So I'm kind of doing that, and I'm hoping the audio is coming through. But I'm just doing that right now, and I'm having fun with it instead of taking multiple pictures. So
instead of paying attention to the podcast,
I am paying attention to podcasts. I have my headphones on.
Captain's asleep at the wheel.
Anyhow, but it's all about our
iceberg
guests.
Straight ahead.
It is totally all about our guests.
The
so,
podcast Valdez.
If you keep turning it like that, you're going to make everyone who watches it seasick, honey.
Well, I'll edit it. That's what I'll do.
You can't edit out the shake.
Back, no, I can't.
Back to our guest.
Yeah, back to our guest.
You can't edit out your face either.
Back to our guest.
What about yours, Robin? See?
We have a guest on the phone.
Like
shut up, everybody.
Yeah, remember that thing we used to have called a guest?
So that's
really
right.
Sorry. This
is really
not
rude.
My fault. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks. It is your fault.
It was.
Anyhow, so Aaron, tell us a little bit about your history with EVA. Where did that start for you?
Well, it all goes back to when I was about 16. I think it was actually my 16th birthday. A friend of mine gave me a tape with the English dub version of Go to Guy's Black Lion. And one of the previews on the tape was for Evangelion, and it just kind of went from there. I was looking for something to collect. I'd been pretty new to anime at that point, and I said, hey, this looks like robots beating the crap out of each other. Cool. And I got it. And I don't know why I collected it, because I was really bored by the first couple episodes, but I heard good things about it, so I just kept watching, and eventually it just blossomed, and I thought it was like one of the greatest things I'd ever seen.
You know, I talked to so many people who say that they got into Evangelion either through a friend or by accident, and people seem to be divided into two categories. The ones who got into it by accident love it. The ones who got into it because someone told them, you have to watch this, you'll love it, hate it.
Well, that's part of the problem is with referring somebody to something. Sometimes people get a really high expectation built up in their mind based on what someone else says about something. And it's kind of like if you have a really low expectation of something and it goes above that, it's really good. But if you have a high expectation and you still enjoy it the same amount, it, by comparison, is not as good. So, yeah, it can really damage people's opinion of the show if somebody tells them it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I still stand by it as one of the greatest cinematic creations that I've seen. I can't think of anything that really even remotely comes close to it in terms of Japanese animation in my mind, except for maybe Miyazaki or Satoshi Kon.
I'm with you there. What else do you like?
My interests are kind of bizarre and varied. I can go from basically having debate about finer plot points of Evangelion to marking out to Power Rangers a rock adventure. So,
I want to jump back to Evangelion actually, since you are the guy when it comes to that. Talk to us a little about what you like about it. What about it speaks to you?
Well, as I said, I got into it when I was about 16, and at that point, I was kind of in a period of depression in high school. So I had a lot of problems myself with self-worth, self-actualization.
A depressed high school kid? What?
Yeah, imagine that. Adolescents being depressed. But yeah, so I had a lot of issues in high school, kind of dealing with myself and my place and, social dynamics. And I kind of saw a lot in Shinji. I thought it was kind of interesting that the details of Shinji's self-loathing were never really elaborated upon. Mm-hmm. You know, he was abandoned by his father, but, you know, you kind of wonder, you know, okay, so what? You know, right. The kid is irrationally depressed, but, you know,
you really have to fill in a lot of the blanks yourself.
You have to fill in the blanks a lot yourself, and in that way you can kind of lend your own interpretation of the character in there, and you can kind of relate yourself to that character, and that's kind of what I did a lot. So when I saw him deal with a lot of these things, and, you know, at the end of the series, you know, he says, you know, I can be here. It kind of set something forth in myself that kind of helped me come to realization about my own relations with people, and that's a lot of what Evangelion is about. That's kind of what Anno set forth. He wanted to burn his thoughts and feelings into celluloid, and he did it extremely well.
How much of Anno is in Shinji? From what you know,
Anno is a lot of most of the characters in the show. They in my opinion, they represent different aspects.
Pen-Pen?
Pen-Pen is actually based on Mr. Pen-Pen, which is a Japanese children's character from way back in the day, from when Anno grew up as a child. They needed a mascot character, and it just kind of came from there. But for the most part, Shinji is a kind of direct view of Anno, a lot of his insecurities, and he kind of, one of his quotes was that the things he doesn't like about the show are the parts where he's in. So I imagine that he doesn't like a lot about the show at all, because I mean he pervades the show to such a strong degree.
Right. Let me ask you, be honest, do you understand it?
At this point, a lot of the fan theory and the fans, we spend a lot of time debating these things, and I've kind of come to the acceptance of the fact that due to the fact that the show was not thoroughly conceptualized from its inception, and it deviated from its intended conclusion, that for that fact, it is a fundamentally incomprehensible thing. We know this for a fact, that a lot of the dialogue in the beginning of the series is directly contradictory to dialogue later on in the way in which they describe things.
I'm going to ask a question here. Who here in the cast has watched this all the way through?
I have not. Ooh, I've watched episode 13.
Most of us.
Okay. I think I've watched all but the last two episodes. Is that right,
that's
Sean?
Interesting. Yeah.
But I saw Death and Rebirth unsubbed.
Well, so this question, really, this question might not mean anything to anybody here, but Aaron, maybe you can talk to it, and I'm sure some of our listeners will understand what I'm talking about. The last scene, they're on the beach.
Oh, God.
What the hell?
Yeah, I want to know about this.
I want to know if you're part of the hybrid group or not.
Yeah, good.
Okay, well,
you have the floor.
I can't really tell you what it means, for one thing, that nobody really has a really concrete idea of what the whole thing's supposed to be. A lot of people, the most concrete of it is that obviously there's a connection between Asuka and Shinji's mother in the way that she caresses his cheek. But the one thing that is important to note about the whole movie is that there's these threads of a couple things that are manifested in different ways. There is frustration and release. This is particularly evident from the beginning and the end, in which you've got the masturbation scene in the beginning.
Yeah, Shinji holding his future in the palm of his hand.
Yeah, and then the strangulation scene at the end, and then the strangulation scene in the beginning, or in the middle. But basically what you have is frustration and release. And there is a strong correlation between masturbation and strangulation. So this is the same kind of idea that is manifesting in different ways. What that means is something that I think is one of those things you have to figure out for yourself. That's part of what Ava is all about. There's a number of quotes from the production words, more or less them saying to find your own answers. Don't take anybody's interpretation as your own. You're supposed to form your own.
Right.
That's part of what Ava is so great about, because you can discuss this, you can formulate, you can think, theorize, postulate, you can just sit there and just scratch your head for hours. If somebody like Anno were to come out and just basically tell you everything, then Ava would be no different than any of the other shows like Trigun or Sailor Moon or Dragon Ball Z or any other widely popular show that you might be interested in for a little while and then move on to something else. I've been obsessed with Ava for years, and part of that has to do with the fact that I it's a fundamentally incomprehensible thing, but it's brain candy. It's a great topic of discussion because everybody has their own interpretation. Everybody has their own way of looking at it.
Well, and your panels at Otakon and Katsukon, et cetera, they're always really well attended. And I think that just sort of speaks to how incredibly popular this is, even after 10 years. Aaron, were you going to jump in?
Yeah, I was going to say, so since what you're saying, Aaron, is Ava's a giant Rorschach test.
Basically.
It's modern.
I mean, I've heard some very, very bizarre things. But yeah, one thing I will say about the beach scene is please do not believe those out there ideas of the girl on the beach not being Asuka. Do not believe that she is some kind of weird combination of the different characters.
Thing. Thank you, my brother.
Please not believe that. That's just complete nonsense.
I have to ask, have you ever been able to get a hold of the White Cross book?
Red Cross book.
A Red Cross book, I'm sorry, yeah.
That's actually, there's three program booklets. There's the Death and Birth program booklet,
yeah.
The Death and Rebirth extended limited edition, and then there's the End of Evangelion program booklet. I have the first two. Somebody owes me a copy of the End of Evangelion program booklet, but basically, the End of Evangelion program booklet is just a repackaging of the Death and Rebirth.
Yeah, yeah. I spent a long time trying to get my hands on them myself.
They're not that hard to come by. It's just they're hard to come by for a fairly decent price and in good condition. I'm not sure how, but Brendan Jameson of Abo Otaku says he like comes by a bunch of them all the time.
Wow, really?
From friends. Yeah, he's actually the one who said he'd hook me up with one, but
I was looking for him before eBay was big, but I had a hell of a time trying to get anybody to ship them to me for less than a couple $100 at least.
Oh, wow. Able books are a great thing to collect. I have dozens of them, and I find them far more gratifying to collect than any of those little figures of the girls
in the bathtub,
putting parts to themselves and right in your face. And,
Speaking of Ava books, what volume are they up to in the manga now?
Well, number 9 is currently the latest that is both released in Japanese and in English. But several days ago, a fan translator by the name of Bo-chan Bird just posted stage 70, which will be the 7th stage in volume 10. And given that all the volumes so far average about 7 stages, it's quite possible that number 10 has been concluded with this stage. So you might be able to see volume 10 in English maybe within 6 months to 9 months, depending on whether another stage is produced after this one.
What do you think of the manga in general? What's your opinion of it?
With volume 9, we've started to see a lot of the fans losing interest in it. Partially because in later editions, volumes of the manga, the artist Sanamoto, who's also the character designer, has taken a bit more liberty with the characters, and in a lot of ways, the characters are a bit more of caricatures than the actual characters themselves. I'm not going to tell you specific reasons because they're kind of shocking.
Well,
little moments.
Let me ask you a question. I'm not going to give away any spoilers here, but there, I think it's in the fourth volume. There is a character who is killed, who is not killed in the series.
Sixth volume.
Is that six? And by the way, I think Sadamoto, I think that was exactly the right decision. I think that in fact the show would have been a lot stronger had they done that to this character. And I think it's one of the most powerful volumes of the manga that I've read so far. Mm-hmm. Why do you think they did that? Why do you think they differed that dramatically?
Well, that's really Sadamoto's freedom with the comic, and I really enjoy that aspect because it's kind of pointless to completely thoroughly and authoritatively translate something from one medium to another. Would you really want to read panel by panel the exact same thing that was in the show? I mean, no, it would be redundant. So it's kind of one of those things where you try to innovate as much as possible, try to make it a little bit different in some instances, much more different in some, depending on what your own opinion of how things should be. And I kind of like that, but a lot of the fans have not and kind of view it as being base and vulgar for that reason.
Well, you get factions of fans. There are people who really like the anime where it's exactly like the manga page for page, and you get fans who enjoy watching a series that's different from the manga, that's different from the movie. And I had some people here who hate when they differ things from one to the next to the next. Like, it should be the same story. So, you know, you do see different groups of people like that.
I personally don't see the point of simply translating something into another medium. I just want to laugh at people that get bent out of shape over the fact that the elves were not at the Battle of Helm's Deep.
Yes, sir.
Them's fighting words.
Nice. So, I've got a quick question, if I may interject. I know a lot of fans have questions about the last two episodes of Eva. They're very disjointed, very disconnected. Is there truth to the rumor that they did send two episodes to the television studio, and the directors there kind of went, redo these, so they just took them to the cutting room floor and produced those last two episodes? Or is that all just sort of urban legend?
Well, now, I have a really bad memory, so I might get this a little bit wrong. But when episode 24 originally aired, they did not have a finished episode at that point. They did not have anything really concrete to create an episode preview, much like the previous episode 24 preview. And what basically people saw was an animatic preview with a lot of rough footage from what became End of Eva. In animatic form, of course, obviously no completed cell animation. But more or less, the perhaps storyboards and animatics, some kind of rough mock-up of what they wanted to do with the final episodes, was sent to, I think, TV Tokyo. And they saw what they wanted to do, and they basically at this point had said, okay, this has gotten way beyond what the target demographic is, you know, what is appropriate for the target demographic. And at that point, it was, okay, guys, you guys can't do this. You got to tone it down a little bit. And knowing Anno and Tsutomaki, the assistant director, it's not that hard to believe that they would completely just throw it out the window and do something completely different. They did not have the time, they didn't have the money, and they didn't have the approval to do the ending they wanted. So what they did was they took an aspect of that and expanded it. And it's that sort of avant-garde, disconjointed, stock footage ending that we got. I personally love it. But then again, I'm a visual artist. And
I'm with you on that. I adore those two episodes.
I mean, the first time I saw it, I was like, I literally did jump up and with one of my friends, yell at the TV for at least 5 to 10 minutes.
I cried for hours. I swear to God, I cried. I wept like a freaking baby.
Well, I did not appreciate them at the time. At the time, I felt like I had been robbed of something, of my time and my money. But after a while, it kind of got under my skin, and I was able to see the character psychology resolve itself, which eventually became what interests me in the show more than the plot. And if you go by what Anno, the director, has said, the plot with the Evas and the angels, it really is just a backdrop for the more important issues that is the characters and how the characters are dealing with their own neuroses and problems and issues with each other and themselves. And that ending was what we got. And then literally 2 weeks after that, the final episode aired, they formally announced the production of The End of Evangelion. So, obviously, this idea did not just come about within the 2 weeks that the final episode aired. They knew, okay, we cannot finish this the way we want to. We'll expand upon this. We'll throw this at them. In the meanwhile, we'll go forth with it and finish it at a later time, and that's what they did, and that's what we got.
I think it's a good time for us to take a break. We will talk more with Aaron Clark in a few minutes, and I want to talk a little bit about religion in Eva, so we'll hopefully we'll do that in the second half. So come back with us, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. More with Aaron Clark.
Hi, this is Frank Edward Nora. Come join me on my daily half-hour podcast, The Overnightscape. It's a pleasantly insane ramble through the mysteries of life in New York City, where I work, and New Jersey, where I live. You'll hear lots of amazing stuff, like reviews of candy, beverages, cigars, shopping malls, and more. Plus, synchronicities, listener email, lame celebrity sightings, and obscure topics of all sorts. For your addictive listening pleasure at TheOvernightscape.com. See you there.
Hello, all you suckers. This is Apocalypse Dow doing a bad impression of Mr. T. And I want to tell you about the Apocalypse Dow show. Apocalypse Dow is this fool from America who lives in Japan. On his show, he talks about life in Japan, makes fun of commentaries from his archenemy, Mick Aloha, puts emails he receives into rap songs, and he plays pod-safe music. He also does skits, usually with me involved. For example, sometimes I do the news or review movies, and I give you the tea take on things. Sound absoludicrous? It is absoludicrous. One out of one impersonated Mr. T's recommend the Apocalypse Dow show. Also, Apocalypse Dow plays 30-second rants he receives from people on any topic, so send them over to him. You can check it out at www.apocalypsedowell.com. That's Apocalypse, D-O-W-E-L-L. You can find him in the iTunes directory too, sucker. When I'm driving around the L.A. Underground in my custom 1982 GMC van, that's hell of a fast. I always listen to the Apocalypse Dow show. Thank you very much. I'm out, sucker.
I got a Star Wars line story for you.
Okay.
Well, this was happened before. This happened when Episode One came out. So this is before, like, you know, Lucas pulled the wool over our eyes and, you know, gave us Jar Jar. And I'm standing in line at Star Wars with my daughter, who was probably, I don't know, about 8 years old at the time. And she says, Dad, you know, we had lines not moving. She goes, Dad, what time is it? I said, it's 10:30, about 10:45 almost. And she said, what time's the movie start? I said, starts at 12:30. And she goes, what? We're standing in line for like 2 hours? And I said, listen to me, you little missy. When I was your age, I stood in line for Star Wars for 4 hours. The line went around the block for five miles. And we stood in line, and it was snowing, and we had chains tied to our feet, and we made it in. And so you, little missy, are going to stand in line for 2 hours. This is fucking Star Wars. All the everybody around me starts cheering. They're all like, yeah, it's Star Wars. No respect from the kids, man. So anyway, and then I saw Jar Jar, and I was like, you know, had no written. My kid never spoke to me for like, you know, 3 years after that.
What the hell was that?
You made me stand in line for two fucking hours for Jar Jar fucking Binks.
All I'm respect like, died know. That day.
It was the classics were good.
Catch an hour of Freaky Geek Speak every week at mondays.pwop.com. Mondays, what Sunday threw up.
Where's the buffet? And you're listening to the Otaku Generation Podcast.
They rock. Actually, thinking about Ohio and OhioCon, it looks like we are definitely going to do our OhioCon podcast panel. It's going to be a 3-hour event. Actually, maybe the first hour might be closed or us setting up, but definitely a 2-hour event, and that's going to be happening. And just go to OhioCon's website.
Come check us out. Beat us with sticks.
What are the dates again?
And I think it's the 6th through the... I have January 6th through the 8th.
That would be correct, sir.
We might give away t-shirts or something. I don't know.
So, bless you.
So you're going to have to go and find out what that's all about. But one thing I was thinking of, Todd reminded me, and I totally forgot about it, totally spaced out, not this week's Apocalypse D show, or obviously not the upcoming one. So for anyone listening, I think that the 22nd episode, 2 weeks ago from our perspective right now. Anyhow, episode 22, there was a guy called in and said, F you to Otaku Generation and blah, blah, blah. And I got new type and you know, I went and I spent $15 and it wasn't a whole lot about them. And
Aaron, like, why did you do that?
I couldn't control myself. I was drunk. It was the coke.
Anyhow, so what I did is I went to Apocalypse. I said, dude, give me his email address. I said, I want to send him a t-shirt. And so he... He said, no, no, thank you, man. It was cool offer, but no, I don't need a t-shirt. Oh. So imagechaos.libsyn.com. Go listen to his podcast. I've yet to check it out. I've been real busy this week. But,
probably badmouth us the whole time. Yeah. We were sitting here promoing.
No, he was just like, nah. Yeah, but it was pretty cool. And Apocalypse did another song, so it was kind of cool. It was an interesting song, but it's definitely cool that he did that. So,
is it about Todd?
It's always quasi. About Todd. Quasi. Don't you know Todd. That?
Guru Todd.
No.
I'm still singing the Kyle song. Mostly in the shower.
It had something to do with Lost in Translation.
While you masturbate.
And resembling poo. It was, those were the key things I took out of the song.
Wow. On that note.
Anyhow, mentioning of Where's the Buffet, we'll hopefully see them, and maybe they'll be at the podcast panel event.
They will be doing their own Hentai Go-Go panel.
And various other things.
The Yaoi panel and various others.
Be sure to check out the Otaku Generation Yaoi panel.
Where Todd and I will be having sex.
Yes.
Well, I'm really sad.
That's what you guys will be doing while I set up. Maybe that's the reason we'll have the room closed.
It's like a sideshow.
That'll be our first video podcast.
So which one of you is going to dress up like Mario?
It's like a circus freak show.
But definitely you guys will be the audience will be the guests, as long with any convention guests that want to partake.
So you can dress as Yoshi?
So if you have any questions, Bowser, or you guys want to interact with us personally, you can be on the podcast. So that'll be really cool. Anyhow, enough about promoting ourselves.
We're such whores.
Oh, you're such a whore.
Yeah, yeah.
Time now for the weekly review.
Okay, Kyle. Speaking of whoredom, hey! Legends of Anime Month continues here at Otaku Generation. Last week we talked about Star Blazers. This week we're going back to 1972. It was a great time to be alive. Nixon was in the White House, men were walking on the moon, and a two-year-old Kyle Dragonash was correcting people's grammar and bitching about Steam Boy. all over Japan.
Wow, you were such a prophet.
Yes, I was. I was. I started early. All over Japan, one word was on everybody's lips. Oh, I thought somebody was going to jump
suppository?
In. Right? No, one
Bukake.
Word.
No.
Well, okay, three words, actually. Kagaku Ninjatai Gachaman.
That was so on my lips.
I know. That's what you were thinking of. Also known as the Science Ninja Squad Gachaman. Sometimes they were five, sometimes they were one, but they were always entertaining.
Ha ha ha, that's not what it really means. Gotcha, man.
You know, I thought it was like a Jamaican cop show. Gotcha, man. But little joke for our friends in the. Anyway, tell me if this sounds familiar. Five young people, four guys and a girl, all of them in color-coded costumes, each of them with their own special powers and high-tech vehicle. Fighting a diabolical and flamboyant enemy. There's lots of posing, cheesy dialogue, and people prancing about. And the hero is a brave but sensitive Bishonen named Ken with a heartbreaking tragedy in his past. Sound familiar?
It was The Simpsons. The Simpsons.
That's this podcast.
That
right?
is this podcast.
Real World San Francisco.
I hadn't thought of those. Those will get you points. Yes, the judges will accept all those. But basically, I've just described about half of the anime made in the last 25 years. But this was the first. This was the one that set the pattern. It was groundbreaking and much beloved. And it was one of the first anime that took conventions from American comic strips and cartoons and adapted it into a Japanese context. Now, if you guys don't remember it as Gatchaman, you may remember it as Battle of the Planets or G-Force, Guardians of the Universe. Now, here is the deal. This is one anime that was adapted into two separate American cartoon series. Here's how it worked. Gatchaman aired in Japan from 1972 to 74 for a total of 105 episodes. Then it was brought to the United States in 1978 by Sandy Frank. And if you're a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, you'll recognize that name. He was, I may have to devote a whole segment to Sandy Frank one of these days. I won't go into any detail now. I'll just have to let that sit there. He took Gatchaman, dubbed it, and renamed it Battle of the Planets, cut it down to 85 episodes. Took out most of the violent scenes and replaced them with brand new filler footage that was created by Hanna-Barbera, also known as Satan McHitler. among the things that he stuck in were Seven Zark Seven, who was sort of a narrator for the series and tied it all together, and was probably the gayest robot on TV until Tweaky came along.
Beady, 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 what's up, Buck?
Yeah, yeah. You have to be of a certain age to remember
Tweaky
that.
Tweaky is awesome, man.
Then...
He is.
So weird.
Alan, are you coming out of the are you coming out of the closet?
No, man, but he was cool, man.
Yeah, Tweaky rules.
It's Tweaky to walk around.
Hey, Buck.
What's up, Buck?
Then in 1986, the rights were bought by Ted Turner, our friend from Atlanta. It was renamed once again, G-Force, redubbed once again with new music put in. It was renamed, restored with some of the original footage, and he got rid of Seven Zark Seven. So you basically had three separate series. And just in the last year, ADV released the original series on DVD, and they've done a pretty good job of it. The print isn't remastered, and a lot of the pictures faded. There's some dirt on the picture, but there are lots of extras on the discs, including commentary by some of the directors and actors. And there's even, I think on every disc, they do a karaoke episode, which is a really good idea, where they strip out all the dialogue. They leave the music and the sound effects in, but they take the dialogue out. So you and your friends can watch this and put in your own dialogue. And I really want to do that with you guys one of these days, because I think it would be hilarious.
That would be.
Of course, this being from the 1970s, the early 70s, there is a downside. The animation, frankly, the animation does suck. The plot is pretty ridiculous, what plot there is. The main villain, Galactor... Does anybody remember Galactor? He's a hermaphrodite. I'm not kidding. He's a hermaphrodite. Although not in the American version. They took that out because they didn't think the little kids could handle it. And the characters, for the most part, are basically just paper-thin caricatures. But it is a lot of fun. It's hilarious to watch, especially if you don't take it too seriously. A lot of fun to watch with friends, especially if you've had a few beers. Very campy and retro. You should see it. Not just because it's funny to watch and just... a good time, but because it is one of the groundbreaking early anime series, and if you are a fan, you really should touch base with it and get a better appreciation of this moment in history. For more information on Gatchaman, you can check out shrinkster.com/9MG, as in Machagon. Only it's...
Or is it, my God, it's terrible.
My God, it's not terrible. Aaron, what do you know? Mr. Ava... boy
expert
monkey man.
I've sat through some Gotcha Man.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, if you take it for what it is, and you're not looking at a masterpiece, you're looking at something that was fun. It's just early 70s camp at its best. shrinkster.com/9MG, and for Battle of the Planets, which some of you younger kids might remember, that's shrinkster.com/9MH. And with that, I will turn the mic over to Dan. Where is Dan? Dan's not here. So,
Dan is not here. Wait, what's this? What are you writing here?
I want the making fuck Berserker. Berserker. That is actually taken, if I'm not mistaken, from the outtakes from Berserk, which are some of the funniest things.
No,
I'm sorry. That's from a song by Rammstein?
No, it was in Mallrats.
No,
was
no,
it really?
No, it was in Clerks.
Or Clerks.
But yeah. Wasn't that from... Anyway, but it's also in the... If you ever get a chance to watch the outtakes from Berserk, they sing that, and they have the characters sing that, and it's really, 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 really good.
Nice.
So, goodbye.
Yeah, Dan, we're having some snow going on around here, and so what Dan did is he decided that it was safer to stay home or his wife would kill him. So,
I had that problem. I'm here anyway.
Todd, hey. That's because you're hardcore.
Todd's sleeping on the couch.
We call dedication. That too.
Thank you, Todd.
Yeah.
But speaking about hardcore, I wanted to talk with our guest, Aaron. Not you, Leprechaun Boy. Aaron. Anyhow, so
don't
Aaron, tell us, explain, in as you said before, in your opinionated way, the whole deal with the religion in EVA. What is that about?
Well, first of all, let me kind of go back to the last question, because I didn't quite get to finish that thought. As there are two endings, there are... two views on whether the two endings are the same thing or not. Some people think that they are the same thing from different perspectives. Some people think that they are completely different because they have different results or different outcomes. I'm personally of the mind that they are different endings, but there's plenty of fan theory explaining that, and you can find that online. Some of it is on my site, or you can come on the forums, and I can refer you to anything if you're a fan of the show or somebody who wants to take a look at it. With the release of the Platinum Thin Pack, you can go on Amazon and you can get it for as low as $50. You can get the Manga Entertainment Movie Box Set for as low as $30 on Amazon. So Ava is really reasonably priced nowadays. You can go out to even Walmart and grab Ava and get the whole thing for a fairly cheap price. Give it a whirl, see if you like it or not, and then just jump right in and enjoy some discussion.
And it's also now on Adult Swim on Cartoon Network, and from what I hear,
yeah,
it's
but
not cut that badly as far as Cartoon Network does things.
Yeah, well, it should be interesting, especially if they air the later episodes with the M designation, which they have now. They only made one very minor edit in one of the earlier episodes, but so far they haven't really done anything to it like they did with the initial airing on Giant Robot Week. As for your question about religion in Ava, that's kind of a funny topic. Fans' view of the show and religion in the show has kind of gone through different phases as it gets further and further debunked and further and further unimportant. I actually recall spending time in forums saying, "You guys, you're spending way too much time quoting the Book of Nod and such and such and some random apocryphal text trying to explain Ava through these, you know, random religious heretical writings." And I was just like, you guys are going way too far with this. This is something that is, on a very basic level, just a cartoon. And they all kind of told me to eat to drop dead, that
yeah,
I was ruining their fun. But nowadays, pretty much everybody kind of agrees that the religious devices are just devices. That's not to say that they don't play any significance in the plot of the show, but in the end, they're basically were picked by the production because it was exotic, because it was different, that nobody had done anything like that. It could have very well have been with Greek mythology or Egyptian mythology. It was just basically something of exotic nature that they chose it for that reason. So when people say that there's a lot of, you know, religious truth in the show, I would suggest not listening to that. Even later spinoffs of Ava, like the Ava 2 game for PlayStation 2, indirectly said that more or less that the angels are just, you know, they're just aliens. They're just run-of-the-mill aliens that are seen through the guise of religious subtext.
I saw two guys almost come to blow over the argument about whether or not the head of Sele was actually the wandering Jew, and they were both citing references from the Torah, and they were just going nuts.
It's both painful and amusing at the same time to see people go to this length of argument over something that isn't really that well thought out. The idea, for those that don't know, the idea of the wandering Jew is that on the day of Christ's crucifixion, one of the people that were there spit on Jesus, and he was condemned to live till the day of judgment. So the idea is that the reason why Kiel and Sele are so hell-bent on bringing about a third impact is because that's the only way that Kiel, as the wandering Jew, can find rest.
Yeah, exactly.
Other spin-off theories include that he's Judas.
I hadn't heard that one.
Wow.
Who has a similar curse.
Yeah.
That has kind of been used in other things as well. Dracula 2000 basically said that Dracula was Judas. Similar things like that. Mm-hmm. But we kind of know that this is kind of bogus because of the fact that when Kiel compliments in the end of Ava, and I'm sorry if I'm kind of confusing anybody who has no idea what I'm talking about, he leaves behind all these mechanical remains that are most likely sustaining his life, and whereas the wandering Jew would not need that.
Right.
So these kind of theories and ideas and rumors just, they percolate through and gain momentum through the online sphere, and it's kind of interesting to see where these things come from. And you can actually, if you have enough time, you can trace where these things come from.
Well, you almost get the feeling as if they threw a bunch of red herrings in the show just to sort of throw you off. I mean, they have the Tree of Life in there and, like, a lot of references from basic Kabbalah. If memory serves me correctly, the four Evas are shaped like devils in some sort of
that one in particular. We have basically found out that one is completely bogus. That was an entirely probably somebody's kind of joke by, you know, coming up with this bogus idea and seeing if anybody believes it.
Oh, really?
That is pretty much just grade A bullshit. The god with the four barons of hell, or the four Christian devils, or it's just something somebody made up.
You gave me a good idea. Was it Snopes is the one? It's the bogus. You need one for Eva. That's what you need on EvaMonkey.com. Yeah,
but I've also heard that I forget which angel it is. It's the spidery one with the four legs and the triangle with the eye. That's
Montreal.
Yeah, that one is a Illuminati reference. If you look at it right.
On the back of the dollar bill is the third eye, the all-seeing eye of the Illuminati.
And if you look at the creature really closely, it sort of looks like a swastika, some people claim. But that's probably a bunch of hoopla as well.
It's most likely people are so hell-bent on trying to explain Ava that they find things that are not really there.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, kind of like Pulp Fiction.
What are some of the craziest people you met doing panels?
Some of the craziest people that I've met.
Like, is there anything that pops out of your mind? I mean, I know we're talking about Eva fans and we're talking about Otaku, but, you know, are there any that are, you know, that have left an impression on you?
Well, this might kind of be, a lot of people view Eva geeks, or really hardcore Eva geeks, as being snobs of anime, but I generally find that most Eva fans, like, really, like, they can be kind of excessive in their devotion to it. Like people buying the Ava edition iPod for $500 just because it's Ava.
Wow.
What basically just means that it has a Nerve desktop pattern on the thing, and then a laser engraved emblem on the back, a special sleeve and special headphones. But, you know, basically it's just an iPod. It doesn't work any different. People will pay $500 for it because it's friggin' Ava. But I've found that most Ava fans are the reason why I still go to conventions. I find that the most enjoyable part of my convention experience is actually meeting other Ava fans in the flesh, because some of them are really, really interesting people. And I want to give a shout out to one in particular, a friend of mine by the name of Mary, who actually sent me a set of Ava diaries.
Okay, explain that. What is that?
They're basically they're diaries that basically are just have, you know, packaging that's Ava. You know, it's diaries and write it, but it's an Ava edition diary set, and it's really, really nice, and I have to give a shout out to her for sending that to me. But I've met a lot of really interesting people through the convention panel experience, and they seem a lot more stable and interesting than a lot of the other fans of stuff. Not to say that everybody else is immature, but I think that a lot of the Ava fans seem a bit more level-headed.
When you're at conventions, have you kind of met the community of your forum users? And have you hung out with them?
Definitely. Part of what I wanted to do from the inception is that of my friends in my social group, I'm pretty much the only person that really, you know, cares about Ava to any great extent. So the only time I can ever really kind of converse and hang out and talk about the show is either at conventions or online. So from the very beginning, I didn't want to just kind of be this person running a site. I kind of wanted to be the medium within the fan base. So if there's somebody that has done something Ava related, or has worked on an Ava project, or has, you know whatever, I probably know them. I have a lot of affiliates and associates, Ava AMV creators, Ava Gutenshi, anybody. And they're really cool people, and I enjoy meeting them and conversing with them, and we get together at conventions and go out for lunch and talk about Ava and hang out and whatnot. So I have met quite a few people from my forums and from other similar communities.
Very cool. Aaron, thank you for hanging out with us. We have a few more things to do, and we certainly want you to hang around and interact with us, because that's what we ask the guests to always do. And so, our resident nerd, yes. No, that's not you, Aaron, Leprechaun Aaron.
Boy. He's a nerd, too. For the record, he's a nerd, too.
Well, actually, we're all nerds. I mean, we're otaku.
No, you're all dorks. There's a difference.
I'm a professional geek. There's a difference.
Nerds get paid more.
Smithers, get in the plane. Sorry, it's just a model.
Otaku Generation. So, everybody, now brings you ready?
Toys with Tech Guru Todd.
Guru Todd.
Wow. Smells bad here.
Thank you for that echo.
Thanks to you guys, man. All right, the first thing I have is dumbass at shrinkster.com/9MZ. I mean, this isn't exactly gadget news, but I thought it's worthy to pass on to our faithful listeners. I'm not quite sure what this guy was thinking, but apparently he thought he might have a really crafty way to steal an iPod. He must have thought people that work at Target are really stupid. This complete ignoramus's name is Jonathan Baldino.
And you, sir, are dumber than me.
I was staying say that name again.
Far away from that. Jonathan Baldino.
Say that again.
Jonathan Baldino.
Say it again.
Jonathan Baldino is a complete dumbass.
His address is... No.
And considering he stole an iPod that he probably doesn't still have, maybe he'll actually download some podcasts and hear this. Again, Jonathan Baldino, you're a dumbass. He apparently went into a Target store toting a homemade barcode for a $5 pair of headphones. He used that barcode label to buy a $150 iPod. So I'm not 100% sure what model of iPod's $150, but that's what the article I read said. Anyway, he takes this label that he made, puts it over top of the barcode sticker on the iPod itself, goes through the checkout. Apparently, this wasn't his first time doing this. Security was waiting for him the second time. I mean, my view is, this is just a bit too obvious. And obviously the security people thought the exact same thing. So he's now facing a felony count of forgery and two misdemeanor counts of theft. The worst part is that he's a college kid. College. You'd think he'd be smarter than this.
Have you seen most of what comes out of college, Todd?
Well, there came
out of college for one thing.
But there are entrance, you know, criteria.
Having an alcohol blood content a certain level, that sort of thing. You
there's
know.
A reason they call it the beer-filled amniotic sack of academia.
All right, I'll totally admit I've never shoplifted in my life, but even I'm not stupid enough to shoplift from the same place twice.
But
I'm not stupid enough to put a $5 tag on an item that should cost $150. Don't be so obvious about it.
Is this because you know this by experience?
I said I've never shoplifted.
He just
said
he doesn't.
If I had, these are just logical things that you wouldn't do. All right, the next thing I have is a Samsung i730 quasi-review at shrinkster.com/9N0.
Please don't shoplift this.
By the way, the dumbass shrinkster link was shrinkster.com/9MZ.
Steal this podcast.
Yeah. All right, so the Samsung i730 quasi-review, again, shrinkster.com/9N0. I mean, I had wanted to review my i730 for you guys. I wanted to work with it for a few weeks prior to reviewing it to give you guys a good idea of what I thought of
it. Let me guess, you broke it.
No, he took it to bed with him. Well, I've had it for a few months now, and it's still not time to review it. You see, it just doesn't work right. It's locking up all over the place. It overheats. The software is terrible. Then again, it's Microsoft, so I could have told you that much. I just don't want to dedicate the time to giving it a proper review just yet. I mean, I want to get all the bad information first. You know, just build it up. Let the anger just completely fester inside of
you. You know what, Aaron? He made a mistake.
Souffle of rage.
He made a mistake. He bought that version instead of our model. Yeah.
Your phone overheats?
Yes.
Yeah. See? So look at that. Isn't it pretty? Isn't it pretty? There you go.
Hey, just think of it this way, though. On these cold winter nights when you're feeling lonely,
you can cuddle up with
the
phone.
It's not a reliable overheating. If I could sit there and go, oh, damn, it's really cold. Like in the office today, the heating was broken in the office. It would have been great to just, you know, light my phone on fire.
Okay, Jimmy.
So anyway, I'll keep you all posted because, you know, I mean, this thing's so bad that my boss is actually asking me to get a different phone because she can never get a hold of me. I am hesitant, but I am leaning toward the BlackBerry 7130E, the new hotness that Verizon's crapped out. I love the design and concept of the i730, but I wonder if it isn't just a little bit undercooked. I mean, I'm a tech guy. I'm in the hacking community for this thing. I've installed all the patches, all the fixes that the user community's put out there, and I still can't get it to work right. Not your standard user's not going to do that. They're not going to have that, even a remotely as good experience as I have had with it. So, and what's weird is because Verizon usually beta tests everything pretty well, and this one just seemed to have slipped through the cracks. Speaking of crappy beta testing, the next thing I have is the Sirius S50 portable audio player. You can check it out at shrinkster.com/9n1. This is a kind of neat digital audio player. It's got about a gigabyte of storage on it. It allows you to directly record from the Sirius satellite network. Now, the thing was going to be one of the items I talked about for the past couple of weeks. Unfortunately, I kept seeing really bad reviews of it. All kinds of rumors about how it was going to be, limited and crippled by the recording industry. I thought, you know what, there's no way they can do that because they'll kill their sales because this information's gotten out there before the product was even released. Well, I've heard enough now that I'm willing to believe all of the rumors. The Shrinkster link takes you to the Sirius Backstage forum where a user is talking about these limits. I mean, check out how the recording industry has limited the functionality of this thing. You can only record... The device actually supports recording of 50 hours of audio, but you can only schedule 20 recordings at a maximum of 2 hours apiece. Quick math tells me that's 40 hours. Not only that, but you're not allowed to record more than one song per recording. Meaning, if your recording has a song in it, it will cut off before the next song plays, because you can't have two songs in one recording. You also cannot schedule recordings of music-only stations. So, I have a device that's on a satellite radio network that plays music, and I can't use it to record 90% of their channel content? And to make matters even worse, you're paying for the pleasure of using all this overprotective digital rights management. Not only monthly for the service, but $380 for the device itself. It's a gig MP3 player. $380 is insane. I mean, geez, you don't even have to be a rocket scientist to figure out why people still download DRM-free digital, illegal music. I mean, it would only seem to follow that people that work for the recording industry aren't as smart as people who aren't as smart as rocket scientists.
You know what? DRM should be don't rob me.
It's insane. It's insane. Anyway, on a happier, positive note, Legend of Heroes, A Tear of Vermilion, shrinkster.com/9n2. Bandai, our friends over at Bandai, have finally released this game over in America, and I've gotten my grubby, clammy little mitts on it. To put it bluntly, this game rocks. Completely kicks ass. It's developed by the Japanese Falcom Company, popular for some of their other role-playing games, which I was actually too lazy to look up on Google and figure out what they were. So warning to the acronym...
You bum.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, you know that thing I was supposed to look up on Google? It was with Matt Palmer's Show 13. There
Holy crap.
Sorry.
That took you like forever.
No, I did it. I forgot all about it.
Google me, baby.
You're wasting all that time with the video recorder.
I know. And mastering the levels here.
So I got a warning to the acronym challenge. This is easily the best RPG on the PSP right now. It's really nice anime-style artwork for the character close-ups and breathtakingly beautiful 3D backgrounds and landscapes. Unfortunately, the character sprites during the gameplay aren't quite as good. They're really small and a little bit too round-looking, if you ask me. There's no speech in the entire game. It's all text. Some have complained of bad translations in the text, but I haven't really seen too much of that as of yet. There are very few sound effects to note. Magical spells, things like that have a sound. The music's decent, a little bit repetitive, but it really fits the theme of the game, so that's all good. Some of the conversations are a little bit predictable and a little bit more drawn out than they should be. The game is triggering a lot of the love that I've had for the old-school RPGs from back in the day, though, and I can definitely see myself pouring a bunch of time into this game, or at least the 50 hours it's claimed that the game takes to beat. Next thing I have is the USB turntable. You can check it out at shrinkster.com/9n3. This is a turntable, for those old black vinyl discs that they used to call records.
Does that come with a microphone?
Two turntables and a microphone.
It is based on some microphone-like USB technology, though. Because it plugs into a USB port for direct recording to MP3 and WAV.
Bottles and cans, just clap your hands.
And just clap your hands.
And this inevitable possibility of burning that audio to a CD is quite prevalent. The USB is just for audio, and it is completely plug-and-play, so there's no drivers required for current operating systems. It's simply supporting the USB audio standards. It also has line-level outputs if you want to connect it to a stereo system.
Speaking of USB, did you see the USB foam dart launcher?
Yeah, it was sold out. It was so sold out, they actually took it off the website because they were
tired about buying
one. Yeah, it was awesome. Well, apparently they had no idea how popular it was going to be.
Yeah.
Wait, what website was that on?
It was M&S something or other.
Okay.
You can find it through Boing Boing.
If you look every
Actually,
single
go to
Gadget,
Engadget
website, Engadget, Gizmodo, they all had it like
That's
first
where
page.
I saw it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
It was pretty cool because you could actually spin the turret and launch them individually off of a USB port.
I'll find that for you to see. It was really neat. And what Engadget made a comment was, we're just figuring out how to hook this up to VNC so we can do this remotely.
there was actually,
oh my God.
There was somebody who went to their local M&S. Apparently M&S is like a store. They went to the local
I think
one.
It's an English store or something.
Yeah, I think it is.
They bought all of the ones they had in stock and they put them up on eBay right now. so hopefully they'll be making a bunch of money off of that.
Scalpers!
Yeah, exactly. So back to the USB turntable. It actually supports 33 and a third RPM, the 45 RPM varieties, but unfortunately you're screwed if you have 78 RPM stuff lying around. So this is what you need if you have some old wax lying around that you want to convert. I mean, it's easy to convert, and you can take it to a newer format.
Wiki.
So the retro toy of the week is the LED Head Classic Electronic Game Simulator at shrinkster.com/9n4. This is a nifty piece of freebie software that lets you play simulations of the old Mattel handheld games. We've actually talked about those in prior podcasts that I was, again, too lazy to Google. These games have been recreated from scratch, apparently, with no use of the original ROM, sound effects, artwork, or anything else. Now, that's a pretty impressive feat. Comes out to be really cool software, and he actually has ported it to Windows, Palm, and Pocket PC. So, you know, you might want to note, though, take a pop-up blocker with you to go to the Shrinkster link, because it's a good site, but he's trying to pay the bills with pop-up ads and donations.
Use Firefox.
Yes, Firefox
would be good. The leprechaun is telling you to use Firefox.
So if I could have come up with a damned outro, this is where I'd put it, because that's all I have for this week.
The leprechaun is telling you that Todd is leaving.
Thank you, Todd.
What else is
You're
the leprechaun
welcome.
Telling me, Aaron?
To burn things.
You're welcome, leprechaun.
Well, the leprechaun is telling me, he's actually looking at me, and he's saying through telepathy that it is time for Odd Things this week, because Robin is actually in the studio.
Yeah.
Holy crap!
I'm in the studio, and I have everything. And
she has boobs.
You guys are going to be really sad, because December 15th, I think, I leave the country and I'm not back for a whole month.
You're going to have to call us.
Yes, I'm going to try to call you guys.
Speaking of which, I'm actually out of town next week and I won't be here. And I probably can't make it because I'm going to be on a plane during the recording.
We could do one Monday.
Sorry.
Right,
I could like email my shit.
There.
Yeah, we might be able to make one in the middle. But
we'll talk about that after the show.
It's traveling time because it's holiday time and I got family all over the damn place.
It's the Robin and Sean World Tour.
Woo!
Yeah, essentially. So what I did was I did, those crazy Japanese, I think we're up to part 5 by now.
Dun dun dun!
I searched the weird, News of the Weird archives yet again for even more outrageous stuff. This time I hope I won't be talked all the way through like the last time I pulled this trick.
Huh, what were you saying?
Yeah, exactly.
We'll try to be nice. Less things.
Yeah. So I've cut it down to 6 articles. And they all come from the News of the Weird Google group. Shrinkster.com/9ly is their official page, or 9NC for their Google group itself. It's just one guy who scours the newspapers for totally outrageous stuff.
Oh, come on. We know you moderate it.
Oh, yeah. Of course I do. So starting out with Toru Nagasawa, 29, a construction worker in Kawasaki, Japan, arrested in July for 124 pairs of eyeglasses, 30 pairs of contacts, all mugged off people.
Mugged?
How do you mug someone for their contacts?
He held them up at gunpoint and took their eyewear. Totally not kidding.
That would really suck.
I'm going to smack you on the back of the head.
Yeah,
I'm going to scratch the shit out of your cornea. Take that, bitch.
He apparently held somebody up for their contacts and they beat him up. And then the police went to his apartment. Oh.
I have to imagine this has at least something to do with the Japanese politeness. This is a stick up. Please take out your contacts and give them to me. Well, okay, if you insist.
talking about Japanese politeness, apparently rudeness has become so prevalent in Japan that according to a maid dispatch to the Times of London, the Tokyo Metropolitan Government has convened its commission on complaints. When translated, the official name for this group is the Study Group Relating to the Prevention of Behavior that Causes Discomfort Among Numerous People in Public Places.
Holy crap.
Wow.
Among public habits bothering the complainers are putting on makeup, sitting on the floor, uninhibitedly reading pornographic magazines, wearing strong perfume, and, we quote, unexpectedly using an umbrella to practice golf swings.
Okay, so basically they're complaining about becoming New York.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
I personally have only one problem with the behavior that goes on Japan in public places relevantly. That's groping on the subway. Apparently a huge problem, up to and including no groping and women-only subway cars.
Yep, that is indeed true.
And if you want to hear more about the groping on subways, it's Shrinkster 9LV, and it's a website called the Uninvited to Japan.
That's funny. Groping, Las Vegas, LV.
No. See, I was going to ask about the, you know, the PSP porn. I wonder if there's complaints about that, too.
Not yet, but they haven't heard the podcast
yet. Sean and Todd haven't gone to Japan yet.
No, it's totally Dan. Dan started it.
Hey, not to hijack. I'm sorry. I was in an airport the other month. Probably
three
months ago. No. Actually, I'm sitting there, and there's this old dude sitting there, like reading a magazine, and I wasn't paying any attention to him. All of a sudden, my boss starts nudging me, and she goes, "Is that a Playboy he's got?" This dude is sitting in the airport, completely like just kicked back reading the Playboy in the middle of the airport, and. Well, I thought to myself, I'm like, well, he's old enough.
This my hero.
It is Playboy. I mean, come on.
He's reading for the articles.
That's the socially acceptable porn. I mean, it's not like he was reading Hustler or Barely Legal.
I do understand that.
Playboy is like a European newspaper.
Understood.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
yes.
It really is.
It's a little off the wall to see somebody just being that open about it, though, because America still doesn't accept that, you know, it's unfortunately.
I
accept all donations of sex.
Anyway. Shun and I used to read a newspaper in London called, I think it was The Star.
The Sun.
The Sun.
Page 3 Girl.
I thought it was Page 6.
Page 3 Girl. Oh. The Star is the trashy tabloid newspaper. The Sun is the high class tabloid newspaper.
I see. Anyway, so they have discovered a new symptom or a syndrome in Japan. To go along with battered wife syndrome, we now have retired husband syndrome. This is when, after 40 plus years of working 10-hour days, 7 days a week, Japanese businessmen retire and go home, and their wives can't stand them anymore.
Well, they never got to meet them before.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are you and why are you eating all my food?
That's totally right. Wives are developing rashes, ulcers, stress symptoms of all varieties, all because their husbands are now living at home. This has caused first a rash of divorces in people over 60. as wives go, "Oh my God, I hate you. I really hate you." And also, it's caused support groups for men who now have to learn to cook and clean entirely for themselves. And doctors are now prescribing women that they have to go out with their friends no matter what their husband says.
Wow.
Sorry, doctor's orders.
Yeah, exactly. Japan's Pro Baseball Owners Association decided in August that beginning next season, leaders of cheering sections at games will be required to submit to background checks and be licensed. These permits are required for anyone who plays drums, plays the trumpet, waves flags, banners, or leads organized chants at baseball games. Apparently, local organized crime gangs were coming in, leading festivities, and then shaking people down for tips as they left.
No, the tips would be contacts and glasses, right?
Does that include the butt trumpet?
I don't know.
Wait, because we haven't done it. Sorry.
You know, I thought we were actually going to make it through a podcast without that. Apparently, I was wrong.
This is not a duck hole free zone.
All right, now I got a sign.
Welcome. You've got duck hole.
I love that.
All right, this is not technically the Japanese fault, but Japanese customers who attempt to eat at one unnamed Western style restaurant in China will now be turned away unless they first apologize for Japan's occupation of China during World War II.
Wow.
This was reported in July in Reuters Dispatch. However, no apologies have been reported thus far.
I would totally ham that up. I'd be like, yeah, that was completely my fault. My bad. I did it. Sorry.
I raped your women. I pillaged the cattle. My fault. I'm sorry. Are you my illegitimate son?
My God.
On an unrelated note, have you guys heard about the guy recently who held up a Wendy's restaurant, was arrested, and they found out his actual birth name was Ronald McDonald?
That's awesome.
Oh, I did hear about that.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Is that really awesome. True?
It is, yes, absolutely true.
It was on the news. It was all over the news.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And real news, too, not just, like, internet news. I actually saw it on, like, NBC.
Yeah.
Wow. You actually, like, watch... real news these days?
It was on, like, during, like, The Apprentice or something.
Yeah, I heard it on NPR, which is, like, penultimate.
My God, real news. And last, something near and dear to everyone's hearts here. Japanese art collector decided to let Christie's Auction House and Sotheby's Auction House go ahead and play rock, paper, scissors.
Nice.
For the privilege to auction off his $17.8 million art collection, which eventually came out to $2.3 million commission for the people who won. Sotheby's lost out by choosing paper. A Christie's executive's 11-year-old daughter is quoted of saying, "Everybody knows you always start with scissors."
Isn't that right, John?
Well, speaking of weird auctions, I actually read somewhere that on eBay right now, someone is auctioning off their porn business.
Yes, I saw that right before I came over here.
How much?
All
$100,000 so far.
They're auctioning off all of their equipment, all of their editing equipment, all of their cameras, all of their stock, and all of their contracts.
It's tons of DVDs.
And the guy's black book with all the phone numbers for all the porn stars that he knows.
Oh, yeah. God.
And training to help you start this business. You're going to get professionally trained to be able to hit the ground running. Apparently, they don't want to sell it. It was just that there was, like, some family argument within the business, and there's now, like, the family's looking at him going, well, why are you doing this? This is wrong. So they have to, like, break this whole business up. Now, buyer beware, because I did actually see the seller has zero feedback.
Well, yeah, because he probably just started it up to do that.
Hey, I'm just saying. If you got a porn business and you have zero feedback, you're doing something wrong.
I'm just imagining the startup. Like, this is how you do a DVD-A shot. Oh, that's just my brother. Don't mind him.
Yeah.
Johnny, put down the gun! He's kind of mad about this. Just pretend he's not there.
Oh, my God. I just found a link.
Hey, wait, real quick, before you get too far away from it, I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
The World Poker Tour, somebody was watching it the other day, and they told me there was actually a rock, paper, scissors competition going on in, like, another room, and you could actually see it on the show. I don't watch the show, but somebody told me
that. Awesome.
Yeah, so apparently there's, like, you can gamble on anything, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's true. I wanted to get back. The retired husband syndrome, I had another shrinkster for that if you wanted to learn even more about it. Shrinkster.com/9LW, in case you cared.
As in Lost Wives.
Yes. Something like it.
Our Lost Wife.
If I could jump in, I'd also like to, if you just are absolutely completely unaware of the intricacies of Japanese society, I have a book to recommend for you.
Oh, by all means.
It's called Perfectly Japanese, and it's by Mary White. It's a book that I had to read for my modern Japanese culture course, and it is absolutely insane. Basically, after reading this book, I came to the realization that the reason why Japan has so much J-pop is that they don't have the time to be emo. If they have any emo music or any emo people, their society will collapse.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're only here in America. That's why.
Yeah, Americans have time to be depressed.
Yeah, so that was it from you, Robin?
Oh, yeah, that's all I have. Once again, if you have any suggestions for segments, give me a call, send us an email, do something, because I'm running out of ideas here.
You'll have a whole month to make them up.
Okay, well, I think it's time for us to wrap up. So anyhow, for news, reviews, and things we've discussed here, for gadgets, toys, and stories, www.otakugeneration.net. And next week's guest, well, that's going to be to be announced because we got a lot of things going on. I'm trying to hammer out some scheduling. I do have 2 weeks from now scheduled, and we're going to talk about what we might do when we record the day after Christmas on the 26th. That's right. I'm pointing at you, Aaron, just because I just needed
Leprechaun.
To do something. That's right. Leprechaun. Anyhow, so you can leave us feedback at otaku.generation@gmail.com or otakugeneration via Skype and or 610-628-3154. And I keep forgetting to bring out the K7 address from Seattle, but I'll do that.
What is wrong with you?
Just because I never get around to it. Never
take my lucky charms.
Anyhow, thank you guys for podcasting in with us this Wednesday. And
Tune in next week for more insanity.
And
dude,
Aaron,
this shit is baby powder.
Anyhow, wow. Aaron, thank you for joining us this week. I'm going to give you the clap again.
Yeah, thank
you. We appreciate it. You educated us on Eva. And you know what? I need to pick your brain some more. So, thanks for joining us.
Okay.
Well, we'll see you next week.
Catch you guys later.
Good night.
Bye.
Peace.